Welcome to the Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Today, we're going to be looking at what it's like to sustain in the shadows. And you're probably like, what do you mean in the shadows? Well, we're looking at what sustainment is like in the special operations and how that works, what the type of units are like, specifically a GSB. And you're probably thinking, well, what is a GSB? I never heard of a GSB. Well, it's going to be a group support battalion. We're going to dive into that today, what that is, what it brings to the force, and what sustainment truly is like for special operations. So to guide us through that today, I have two guests with me who's going to tell us what life is like in special operations for sustainers and how they conduct their operations. With me today, I have Lieutenant Colonel James Brody and Captain Heidi Shee. If you would both be able to introduce yourselves to the audience.
Absolutely. And first of all, thanks for inviting us here today, Garrett. Excited to talk about the GSB. I'm James Brody. I'm the 10th GSB Commander over in Fort Carson. I've been in the seat for about a year. Prior to that, I served at US SOCOM, and I've spent time in 7th Group, 3rd Group, along with the Defense Intelligence Agency, Army Sustainment Command, and the 21st TSC.
Captain Heidi Shee, spent about a year right now in the GSB. Most recently, I deployed out to the CG SOTA of the Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force 10 as the joint J4, Joint Director at 4. And then I've been the Deputy SPO in the GSB. Prior to that, I took command in 4ID and 4CAB.
Well, thank you both. Excited to have you both on here today. Kind of walk us through your life's experiences and what life has been like in the Special Forces side of the house for sustainment. And with that, I know there's going to be a lot in the audience going, what is a GSB, a group support battalion? I've maybe heard about it in the schoolhouse, but I have no idea really what it is.
Yeah, I think it's important to probably start by framing out what a Special Forces group is, Garrett. And as I think about it, there are a total of 7 across the Army, 5 of which are active duty, all of which are individually aligned to a specific COCOM. So 10th Group, for example, is aligned with UCOM, and each of the other ones have their own respective AOR. Within that group, consisting of about 2,800 soldiers, so between 7 battalions, so 4 tactical line SF battalions, a group support battalion, psychological operations battalion, and the civil affairs battalion as well. Going forward, what's interesting to note is a SF group is the only 06 deployable headquarters in the SOCOM enterprise. And typically when they go forward, they're geographically aligned under a theater special operations command or under a SIGITIF concept within a task force. Specifically within the group support battalion, about 550 soldiers split between 7 different companies, consisting of about 64 MOSs at last count. So the headquarters and headquarters detachment, typical HHC type company formation with the addition of cooks, sustainment and distro, much with what everyone's familiar with an ACO. So think about your distro plus your riggers. And then we have a maintenance company, very similar to a Bravo company, with the addition of the base support squadron and engineers, also electronic maintenance and ground maintenance. We have a MICO, military intelligence company, so counterintelligence, human intelligence, and various other disciplines within the MI field. A signal detachment, which is a lot of tactical level signal capabilities, with the additional responsibility of being charged with being able to deploy the 06 headquarters. We also have a chemical company, which is pretty cool, pretty interesting. And then they have subordinate teams that are each aligned with our tactical SF battalions. And then we also have an advanced skills company, which is kind of an anomaly. Great opportunity for us. It's an 04 level SF company with a lot of senior Green Berets that teach those very advanced skills for the formation. So quite an eclectic formation, but a great organization to be a part of, specifically dealing with a lot of formations we don't typically get the chance to see as a logistician.
So you said there's 5 active duty. Where are the other 2 at?
Yep, the other 2 are National Guard units that also augment the 5 active duty units throughout the world geographically.
Okay, definitely a unique opportunity for our National Guard counterparts.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it segues well into what we're seeing in the conventional side, which is the necessity to tie in with our COMPO 2 and 3 partners. I know we're going to delve into the LISCO concept, but I think it's incredibly important for us to tie in garrison and help us prepare better for when we go into combat.
Okay. So as you broke down the elements that are underneath your command, so when you talked about like maybe like the Alpha company side, like, you know, and then the Bravo company, are they the same size as like a normal BSB or are they a lot smaller?
Yeah, very similar in size. I would say they are. The only variation would be our ACO also has the inclusion of the riggers. So slightly bigger, a little bit more capability there. So very similar in construct.
Okay. Then you still have your, like, your own SSA that team runs?
Absolutely. We have our own organic SSA within that sustainment and distro company. And then obviously, again, we have that distro and then supply services as well.
Okay. And same with field feeding?
Field feeding, we have we have approximately 12, 92 Gulfs if 35 were authorized. So we're still working through that. We recently contracted our DFAC. So the hope is that we'll now be able to utilize our 92 Gulfs in a field construct a little bit more. So we're excited about that.
Okay. So especially for everyone out there, you can see there is a lot of sustainment MOSs within the Special Forces, especially within the GSB, that you can get yourselves involved with. So it's interesting to see the comparison between a normal BSB or now LSBs, as we're transitioning to a GSB and seeing those similarities. So how is, and now we talk about the formation side of the house, so really how is sustainment similar or maybe different compared to, you know, the conventional force?
Yeah, great question, Gary. As I think about what sustainment is in SOF, number one, sustainment is sustainment. Number two, inherently, a lot of what we do in SOF is joint. So when we deploy, a lot of it is joint, a lot of it is combined. And quite frankly, a lot of it is done autonomously. Obviously, SF formations are a lot more leaner than an infantry or armor formation. So inherently, we operate in a lot more of a leaner construct. So you may find yourself operating autonomously in a larger region with more freedom of maneuver. But again, that furthers the necessity to tie in with our conventional partners at Echelon.
Yeah. And being, as I mentioned at the beginning, the sustaining the shadows, you know, being smaller elements, a lot of our conversations have talked about with base clusters and everything. And I imagine you all have done a lot of work, but just because of the nature of how you operate and being smaller teams, you've probably done a lot of work with that concept then, I imagine.
Absolutely. We're incorporating a lot more into our FTXs back in Garrison, but also most notably how we interact with our partners forward. And again, going back to the UCOM construct, we're heavily tied in with the organic organizations like the 21st TSC and like the 16th Sustainment Brigade. And frankly, we're incredibly fortunate to have phenomenal partners out there. General Layler, Colonel Richardson, they've done a lot to help us set the conditions and prepare for what we see as the next conflict.
Okay. And your specific group, 10th group, and that's tied with Europe, as you said, correct? So I guess our next concept is you've been with the war in Ukraine, then with 10th group?
Absolutely.
So how is that, like, what role does the GSP play with that? Like, how is that all unfolding?
Yeah, I mean, a significant role, to be frank with you. I mean, 10th Group has ran the 06 level headquarters in that region for 5 years. And this is actually our first 6 months of not running that 06 headquarters. Mm-hmm. So it's been a heavy lift across the group from well before I arrived in there. When I think about the GSP's role, most notably, it is the train man and equip. Preparing individuals to go forward, not just in the sustainment field, but also specifically in the MI field and the signal field, making sure they're trained for the next fight, they're manned and equipped, and then we provide a significant amount of individual augmentees. The second part to that, again, alludes back to my previous note on integrating with the sustainment force, making sure that they're prepared going forward in that region.
Okay. And then just for clarification for the audience, because you hear, oh, wait, the 10th group is in Ukraine. Like, can you just clarify, like, the role that they have over there?
Yeah, it's twofold within 10th group. I alluded to the 06 level headquarters. So a combined joint special operations task force, CGSOTA, that operates in Germany by one of our 06s that are organic to the 10th group. And then we also have a heel to toe requirement for our 05 headquarters. So one of our four tactical SF battalion deploys primarily to Poland and operates out there. And we've been doing that for a long time.
Okay. It's just like a training role?
Yeah. Train, advise, and assist is the way I would codify it as. Correct.
Okay. And then, so who are like the stakeholders in the GSB's concept of support then over there?
Yeah, another great question. When I think about the concept of support, I probably think about three primary stakeholders. Number one, our TSOC, our Theater Special Operations Command, working tied in with the J4. Also, again, going back to the 21st TSC, heavily engaged with them as we think about arts, receiving, staging, and onward integration. And then really from within the theater, a lot of it is the 16th Sustainment Brigade. In addition to that, we also have the 528 Special Operations Sustainment Brigade based out of Fort Bragg. That is our division sustainment equivalent, and they provide a lot of additional support when it comes from augmentation and some of the capabilities we may not have resident in the GSB.
Okay. Yeah, I was able to get some. So my experience when we went over to Europe for Atlantic Resolve, so I was in the Movement Control Battalion the overseer. We worked with the 21st TSC in the 16th Sustainment Brigade, but we were, you know, stationed in Poland, so we were overseeing all the movement in Eastern Europe when it comes to Atlantic Resolve. So understanding, oh, there's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, I mean, again, people don't realize that we have a lot of capabilities resident to the GSB, but we are also heavily reliant upon our conventional forces. Quite frankly, we don't have the amount of doers or the equipment density to do a lot of what we need. So again, extremely thankful for the support we receive in the theater, and we just wouldn't be able to do it without them.
Yeah, because I know it's our big thing was customs clearance and doing all the ton of paperwork to get convoys and different equipment moved across theater.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different clearances. I don't think they've changed much over the years. They're always a heavy lift. They don't get any easier. So yeah, one of those unique challenges at Europe.
Yeah, especially when you're using the same form from the 80s. It's the same form.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the challenges of supporting a combined slash, you know, like a joint headquarters over there?
Yeah, as I think, and I've been fortunate enough to deploy in two combined joint headquarters, both in SOF, once in Afghanistan, and then recently between Lebanon and Jordan. And I always think about classification. And it's something that's not unique to the sustainment community. It's quite frankly something we're challenged with across the entire department. I remember when I was in SOCOM at the time, the CG, General Fenton, would often tell his staff, I don't want to hear no foreign, I want to hear yes foreign. And that always resonated with me when I went forward because I was the J4, we had a combined staff. And in some instances, I had to hold multiple venues discussing the same topic, but at different classifications. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those challenges that makes it a little bit more complex to build a team, but it can be done. Yep. You just have to be very deliberate when you're creating a team. So classification is the first one. The second one I'll throw out is BOSI, Base Operations Support Integrator. It's understanding who has BOSI for your specific region and how you can leverage those capabilities in theater.
Mm-hmm. And as you can see, especially for the audience out there, is there's a lot of similarities between working in the conventional force compared to special forces. And really, you're still doing the same task. You're supporting an element. You have, as we talked about, as the way the GSB is established. I mean, it's very similar to a regular BSB, LSB, and how you all operate. You know, of course, you have your small differences, but it's very similar. It's not this arbitrary thing that some people might think. It's like completely out left field. I have no idea what I'm getting. It's very similar from how you're describing it right now.
Absolutely. And I often tell people when recruiting individuals, we want individuals to come into SOF as enablers with conventional experience. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly important to strike the balance between having individuals that have been in SOF and then people like Heidi that haven't been in SOF but can bring that conventional experience in and help us further our endeavors.
Yeah, and I know we're going to be getting a lot into that as well, you know, understanding like what it's like to get into the SOF community and get those different perspectives. But right now, you know, we're transitioning out of, you know, counterinsurgency operations right now, and the focus has come back to large-scale combat operations, or LISCO. Same concepts that we, you know, did a lot of training for back in the 80s and 90s. It's like now we're just kind of pulling those books off the shelf and got to dust them off as we kind of change our mindset and the type of operations that are ahead. So where do you see a GSB then about 3 to 5 years from now based on like this concept of a GSB and LISCO?
Yeah, another good question. As I think about it, probably two things stand to mind. Number one, like most sustainment formations, we're going to continue to be asked to do more with less. Less enablers, less equipment. So that's why it's just incredibly important that we make sure that the individuals we have are trained and prepared for the next fight. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest part. The second part is also just that tie-in again with our conventional partners. Having less individuals, having less capabilities requires us to be integrated early and often with our conventional partners. And we've been fortunate again with 4th Infantry Division, specifically the Sustainment Brigade, to be able to tie in a lot with their initiatives back in Fort Carson. And I think that does a couple of things. It makes us more prepared to support the formation we're charged with. And it also helps build the next generation of sustainers for wherever they go after.
So when it comes to the Theater Special Operations Command, like how does that relationship work, campaigning like to support them between your groups?
No, it's a great relationship, to be honest with you, Gary. And I think about SOF in really two different capacities. We have our inherent responsibilities for campaigning, which we're charged with by the Theater Special Operations Command, the TSOC, as you alluded to. And then also our wider responsibility to be prepared for LISCO. And I think that the critical point in that is understanding our arms cycle. So our arms cycle, very similar to the conventional army. You have red, Ember 1, Ember 2, and then green. Ember 1 is deliberately designed to tie us in with our conventional partners and understand our preparation for LISCO. And then number two is that second part, very theater specific, depending upon where we're campaigning at. And obviously green is that deployment cycle. But I think that deliberate delineation between those four cycles is important to make sure that we're preparing our service members both for LISCO, but also for our immediate fight, which is campaigning. And I want to pass that over to Heidi. Again, Heidi kind of alluded to the fact she had the opportunity to go forward. So I think there's value in her maybe talking about some of her experiences.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the TSOC does provide to us is definitely their expertise and their knowledge within the theater. Again, there's people that have been working in the TSOC for many years. And not only that, but then also just having the fluidness, because as we said before, the SOTIFs are rotating in and out on a 6-month cycle. And so having a TSOC that's inherently there that understands the problem set that they're working with, and also tying those mission sets that the teams are executing for campaigning, tied to the O plans and the con plans there. They have that expertise and that knowledge to really guide the teams there. So the TSOC in that nature does help 10th Group as a whole. And then also just because we're tied into them from the rear as well. And so we're getting a lot of lessons learned coming out of the theater consistently with the TSOC.
Okay. So just for, I'll put it in my simple terms, just for clarification for this. So the TSOC is a forward element. It's like operates as your higher headquarters that where you'll rotate in and out of. They're always established there in that theater.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And again, that's for each of the combatant commands. They each have a SF 1-star, 2-star that serves as the senior SOF advisor. And then usually double hatted is also the theater special operations commander as well.
Okay. That's awesome. So right now within this world, like we're seeing across the world, just the changing technology comes to drones, unmanned systems, the threat they present on the battlefield. So how is the SOF community integrating those systems when it comes to, concepts of support, as well as, countering them when it comes to survivability?
Yeah, I'll take that, Garrett. So I think, one, we're garnering a lot of lessons learned from the war in Ukraine, specifically the TSOCs out there also helping us understand what is going on in Ukraine. And we're able to take those lessons learned to not only just build on, but also innovate in terms of UAS systems, and using that to then build systems of our own across 10th Group. And I think also just for us specifically, we're also trying to integrate some of those systems within our FTXs as well to kind of learn those TTPs and continue to grow how to adapt to UAS systems as a whole.
Okay. Yeah, I know it can be, it's a bit of an interesting time because technology is changing so rapidly right now. We're just, sometimes it's reacting as we go just to all these new systems. And though as we develop something, we're able to counter it. And then it's like something else is able to be developed. So I know both on the conventional side and the soft side, just finding new ways to both counter as well as integrate them into our systems. So when it comes to like, how do you really see the GSB when it comes to the large scale combat operation, when it comes to that type of fighting?
No, another great question, Gary. As I think about it, I probably the best way to frame it is by phase, right? As I think about phase zero, a lot of it goes back to what I alluded to earlier is serving as the integrator and then working with our conventional partners. As we progress potentially into a phase one, a lot of it, again, is the RSO and I, making sure the conditions are set and making sure we're set in the theater going into phase one. I think if we're doing those three things, we're setting the conditions. And then as we progress potentially into a phase one, phase two, I see the GSB operating in the peripherals. The battlefield is going to be congested, it's going to be contested, and like any LISCO scenario, it's going to be rapidly evolving. So if we can set the conditions early on, the relationships, the environment, and the theater, I think we'll be well postured going into full contact.
So before we get into the whole talent management piece of this, and is there anything that we missed today when it comes to the GSB specifically and how you all operate that we wanted to highlight for the community?
Yeah, I think one point that's interesting is the GSBs do not have an organically aligned sustainment brigade. We have 528 Special Operations Sustainment Brigade, which is out bragging. They do an incredible job with providing us augmentation as needed. But as we look at a LISCO construct and us deploying, we are inherently going to be reliant upon the formations that are already in theater. So again, it just ties back to the necessity for us to build those relationships early and often to make sure that there's a natural segue going into conflict.
So it's like the concept of alone and unafraid.
Yeah, alone and unafraid, absolutely.
For the way you all operate then.
Absolutely.
Okay. So as we kind of transition this conversation, now we went through prior understanding of what a GSB is, how you're operating, some references on, you know, what sustainment is like in a GSB. But really, I kind of want to look at it now as for a sustainer, like, hey, maybe someone's out there saying, okay, I've been interested in, you know, getting part of this community. One, of course, is going to be how that works itself out. How do you? But two is what life is like for a sustainer in the soft community then. So how do you talk about you just kind of went over into this side of the house. You said you did your command where again?
4ID and 4CAB. Yeah, so I've been in aviation brigade for a lot of my career before coming over to the soft community.
So you kind of just, you know, jumped headfirst in.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot. It was definitely a big transition as well. But I think one of the things that makes a soft sustainer inherently, quote unquote, different than what you're used to in the conventional side is just like we kind of hinted to earlier, but just being alone and afraid. And I think one of the key aspects to being a good soft sustainer is to be able to master your craft, because at the end of the day, you are out on your own. They expect you to know your job as you come in. Generally, we hire a lot more senior lieutenants and senior captains just because we expect them coming in to have that knowledge. And so, one, knowing your craft, but also being confident in knowing that you know your craft, because at the end of the day, there's probably only one or two logisticians in the room. And so you have to be out there to be able to speak on what you know, and also be there to provide the sustainment support needed for the teams that are out spread across countries.
So what was it like compared to, like, you know, so you grew up on the aviation side doing all that type of sustainment. So what has it been like, night and day for you?
I think for the soft community specifically, I don't think that we necessarily leverage things that are different, but we definitely tie in conventional aspects, and we use certain conventional aspects a little bit more than what certain people are used to. So I think just some things to highlight specifically, cross-service agreements like AXAs in the soft community, we leverage that a lot more just because, one, inherently we have a lot more national partners, and so relying on that more rapidly, and then also the host nation support as we operate more alone and afraid in those countries, or more reliant on those things. Another program that I think the soft community is generally more reliant on is, you know, operational funds or FUs and our pay agents to go out there on the local economy, because that's the way that those teams are able to sustain themselves. And so while these programs are inherently conventional, I just think that the soft community, we rely on those programs a little bit more than the conventional side.
Okay. So for anyone out there, you know, they're like, okay, maybe maybe a senior lieutenant or a captain or so. They're like, okay, I'm thinking about doing this. So what can I expect if I join this community?
Yeah, so I think from the soft community, something, if you're willing to enter the soft community, I think something that we look for specifically is, again, like we said, people that are willing to take those levels of increased responsibility. Again, if you're a lieutenant, you can find yourself, you know, in a different country with teams spread all across that country and trying to figure out how to support and sustain them. And so if you enjoy operating alone, that level of increased responsibility, and same for, we talk about senior enlisted or low enlisted soldiers as well. One of the things we task them with is driving across multiple countries in using a CDL, commercial driver's license. And so having that level of increased responsibility, if those things excite you, and that's something that you want to do, that's what the soft community is looking for.
Yeah, I think a couple of other things that stand out to me, Garrett, is the art of the possible. Being able to critically think through complex challenges and dynamic environments and finding a way to get to yes without finding a way to get to no. I also think about some of the unique opportunities that are out there in soft, and we've both benefited from them. 10th Group, for example, we're charged with doing cold weather training every year. So we send a forward logistics element out to Montana. We conduct log packs with snowmobiles. So some very unique, maybe unconventional methods of doing the same things we do in the conventional Army. But again, just some unique opportunities to kind of develop people's portfolios and mindsets.
Awesome, yeah. So I'm out here in the community right now. And I'm like, okay, this sounds very interesting. Now I want to get myself to be part of this community. How does that work? Like, how do I become, you know, a sustainer in the soft community?
Yeah, I think it depends at what point in your career you're at. So I'll speak to mine. I came in the Army. I was in a conventional sustainment brigade. I went to the career course, and I had the opportunity. I'm dating myself, Garrett. This was before AIM. This is when you went to your branch manager, and I was fortunate enough to get to 3rd Group. But getting in is not the hard part. the part that really stands out to me is coming back. And we have a very deliberate, at least within 10th group, model on how we retain and recruit individuals. And Heidi's a perfect case study. She joined the team. We hired her early, coming out of a company command position. She's deployed. She's had some schooling opportunities. She's done incredibly well. We will assign her with the K-9 ASI, which is an identifier that demonstrates that you've served in SOF successfully for a designated amount of time. And then she'll have the opportunity, hopefully later down the line, where she can return to SOF potentially as a field grade. But really, a lot of it starts with just doing the basics right. If you do well and you're a company commander like Heidi, the network will happen. The opportunities will present themselves.
Tim?
Yeah, I think just to add to that, I think for me, I was fortunate enough to have leaders that pushed me to enter the SOF community. Prior to this, I had two battalion commanders. Both my previous battalion commanders were 160th personnel, and so they originally were pushing me to join the SOF community. I think, like they said, identifying certain aspects, ability to operate independently and also think critically were one of the key aspects, and having leaders that, one, pushed me there and then also helped me obviously interview and network to even get into 10th Group Post Command. That's what really helped help me enter the community.
Okay, so you mentioned that, you know, it's not that once you're in, that's it, you're in forever. You can come and go.
Okay. Absolutely, and I think that's a salient point, right, Gary? And I always tell people this is, there's nothing wrong with spending a good amount of time in SOF, but you have to balance that with conventional experience. My personal opinion is, it's difficult to bring something to a SOF organization if you don't have those conventional experiences, because when it comes into fruition and you're deployed, or even when you're doing garrison support, you need to understand the conventional systems and processes to be value added. So I think that's incredibly important.
Okay. Now, is there, I ask people out there and be like, oh, wait, is there like an assessment I have to go through or different, you know, things like that to be part of this community on the sustainment side?
Yeah, so as I think about SOF, I typically put it in two different buckets. What we categorize as black SOF, which would be your JSOC, SMU type elements, which there is absolutely a selective recruiting and retention process for. And then white SOF, which is the 7th groups and the 528 that I alluded mm-hmm. to. And no selection criteria to come in, just obviously a necessity to do well, to stay in and be retained.
Okay, because it's something like, you know, you're thinking like the selection processes and stuff. Do I have to go to a course? You know, do I have to go through different things to be selected or be assessed? Because I know that's going to, people hear SOF, and that's what they probably, their mind goes to. And I know how that correlates for the sustainment side of the house.
No, there isn't. The example I would allude to is we hired three logistics majors, went to Leavenworth last year. And of those three, two of them have never been in SOF before. So our incoming group S4, conventional guy, 82nd, spent some time at DLA. He's finished in CGSC, interviewed incredibly well. He'd be a great addition to the team. And he was simply hired and now will join the organization. And I'm sure he'll do incredibly well.
Okay. So maybe like on the field grade side, what does it look like? Especially like me. I mean, I'm about on my way to go to school myself to be a major. So what would life look like for me as a field grade?
And I always tell people, having been in three groups, you know one group, you know one group, because they're all incredibly different. They're different by the construct of their mission, the AOR, and quite frankly, by the culture of that organization. From just a flat-out programmatic process, there's a couple of KD positions for logisticians in an SF group. There is the group S4, which is your typical brigade S4. A lot of contracting, a lot of systems and processes working on a group-level staff. Your battalion XO, no different than a BSB, LSB construct, managing the staff, chief of staff, second in command. There is also the GSB S3, which is kind of an anomaly in that sense. If you look at a LSB construct, CSSB construct is typically a captain, senior O3. For us, we have the fortune of having an O4. So it's an O4 logistics officer that serves as a GSB S3, just to put them on par with their peers that are all SF O4s working in that capacity. And that is a KD billet. So we're fortunate to have that. And then just lastly, the support operations officer. And again, just the fact that all the groups are different, ours is unique in the sense that we have a requirement to send an O4 forward to serve as that combined joint special operations task force J4, like Heidi did on a rotational basis. So a lot of opportunities, but the positions aren't very dissimilar to what you see in the conventional Army.
So I really appreciate this conversation because it's painting the picture for the audience of what, you know, life is like. Because there are going to be people out there right now going, okay, maybe I'm interested, you know, either being a lieutenant, a captain, and as we talked about, you know, you can enter in at different levels. So what kind of would life really be like? You know, I decide, I enter in, and we talked about, hey, I can come back out. So what would that kind of look like? Especially as, you know, me, I'm about to be a major myself. So be able to enter in. You talked through the KD jobs that are available. Like, I can jump back out for Brodney. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I'll talk through the lieutenants and the captains, and then I'll pass it over to Heidi as a soon-to-be major going down the line. As I think about lieutenants, what we're typically trying to hire is first lieutenants. So coming in, going through BOLIC, having the opportunity to serve in a conventional force, and then bringing you in as a first lieutenant to potentially serve as an FSC XO, or, you know, SND or maintenance as an XO or platoon leader, just as a broadening opportunity. As a captain coming out of the career course, you could potentially come in. Typically, we try to have our captain spend some time as an S4 in a line battalion or the GSB before they go on and serve as a forward support company commander. Those are the primary opportunities. The last one I would offer is the deputy SPO is usually the senior O3 in the population. Those are the standout positions and opportunities. But again, just incredibly important to bounce in and out so you can bring those conventional experiences. Interested in your thoughts, Hattie.
Yeah, so I think for me specifically, again, I was able to bounce in, fortunately, as served as a deputy SPO for the GSB for about a year, going on to go be an instructor at West Point and then graduate school following. So the hope is that, you know, through those experiences learned outside of the force, then bouncing back in again for 04 time as a major.
Okay. So what is the work-life balance like in this community?
I appreciate it. I think it's one of the founding principles of what we do in SOLF, where we work hard, but we also have an opportunity to focus in on our families, our friends, our personal lives when we're not doing our operational mission. So there's a lot of opportunities to balance the two to make sure that you're as effective as possible when you're in those operational environments that we need you. Also, I appreciate the level of predictability. Our cycle is very deliberate. We understand when we're going to be gone. There's no surprises. So we're able to manage that pretty well.
Okay. From your perspective, Heidi?
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, like Colonel Birdie said, the cycle is very predictable. Again, we talked about the arm cycle. Now that the groups are transforming to four battalions as well, that will allow, again, the load to be shared amongst four line battalions. And so you know when you're on for 6 months and then when you're off. So that cycle in itself helps with the work-life balance.
Okay. So now I really appreciate this conversation we had today. We were able to really get into life in the GSB, life versus stamina, especially in this part, just to provide the audience an understanding of like, hey, if someone's out there and they're interested in joining the SOLF community and what their life could be like. Before we close out today, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to highlight for the community, either with the GSB? I know we hit a lot on that part, or just life as a sustainer in the SOLF community?
Yeah, no, another great question, Gary. I think personally, just two principles that have kind of always resonated with me. Personally, I always aspire, and someone told me this a long time ago, you don't have to be the smartest person in a room, but you can always be the most prepared. And I think preparation is something that we can all do deliberately on our own, and it can always set us apart, specifically as sustainers. The other part I often think about, specifically when I'm considering recruiting, is not hiring the best person on the team, but hiring the best person for the team. Because that's incredibly important. You can be incredibly talented, but if you're not a team player, you're not integrated in that team, your value is always going to be clouded. I don't know your thoughts, Heidi.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it is a little bit of both, sir. I think, again, mastering your craft, we talked a lot about that earlier today, and how in SOLF and also as a sustainer, again, you're often one of the only sustainers in the room. And so having that knowledge and that expertise and being able to take that to the table. One of leaders once said something to me that has always resonated with me. That's you have to think in order to think outside the box, you have to know what's in the box first. And so for us, what's in the box, that's doctrine, regulations, taking lessons learned that through other communities. What is the enterprise doing as a whole? Once you understand that, only then can you think outside the box, start to innovate and start to make changes within the organization.
And Garrett, I'll pile one more on that I have always appreciated in my time in SOLF is that I have never felt devalued as a sustainer. Amongst a room of Green Berets, tactical professionals, maneuver combat arms guys, as a sustainer at the table, I have never felt devalued. I've always felt appreciated. I've never had to fight to get to the table. But again, it just goes back to asserting that credibility, mastering your craft, and I think you'll find it a rewarding experience, both personally and professionally.
Well, thank you both very much for that. I also want to give you an opportunity for what kind of wisdom you may have for the sustainment committee from both of your years of experience. It doesn't have to be about the soft side of the house, but you both come from a very diverse career background, and I just wanted to be able to give you an opportunity to talk about any wisdom you have for the community.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I always impart on everyone that I'm around, and someone told me a long time ago, is love what you do and you never work a day in your life. If you can find something, I mean, we love sustainment. I know Heidi does, I do. But if you can find a niche that you are passionate about, I think that's when your true power, your true ability will shine. So just got to make sure that you're doing something that makes you happy, and then you'll find it rewarding. And I think everyone will benefit the most from that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think just take hold of your career. I think oftentimes we try to just, it's easy to let the army slide by. Sometimes jobs will just come and go and you can just take the next job, but do the research. If there's a certain job you want to take, if there's a certain organization you want to be a part of, fight for that spot. Go reach out to those people and network to get those jobs, because at the end of the day, you are your own person and you can be responsible and take care of your career. And so for me specifically, I really did want to join the soft community. And so like finding that way to get in and speaking with the right people and also having leaders that supported me, I think that is just a piece of advice I'd offer.
Well, thank you both very much for that. We went through a lot of different topics today, went through a lot of different information, and especially with this one, I can only imagine there's going to be a lot of people out there who's going to have questions, specifically want to be a, hey, can we dive more into what life is like for sustainers in the soft community? So where can people find you at? They want to be able to reach out to connect more with you.
Yeah, absolutely. The global is the best method for me, james.a.brody.mill@army.mill. I look forward to hearing anyone that's interested.
Yep, same for me as well. Heidi.z.she.mill and army.mill.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for taking the time to come meet with me today. It's been a fantastic conversation. So I really appreciate the opportunity to meet with you.
Thanks, Garrett. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Garrett. So there you have it, folks. We went through and kind of analyzed what sustainment is like in the shadows. And there's much more to get into on this conversation. So I highly implore you to reach out to our guests today. Reach out to those you know who are in a GSP and just continue to kind of pick their brains. As we talked about, you know, you're going to be working with them. You know, they're not working alone. They're not completely isolated. It's that relationship between the conventional force and the special operations. So there's a lot to learn, a lot to understand. I really hope you got a good understanding of what life is like for sustainers. And if you have more questions, reach out to see how you can become part of the community and continue to support the overall force. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, Sustainment Leaders Start Here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you'd like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at the U.S. Army CASCOM page. We'll see you next time. Sustainment Leaders Start Here.